The poet William Blake said, "Imagination is evidence of the divine." And we have stepped on to this path of the holy fool that is paved, if with nothing else, imagination. This is the second week of our series, The Path of the Holy Fool, and it is guided by the author Lauren Artress with a book by the same title. Many of you I know are in study groups this week, well, starting last week, actually, that are really unpacking the gems in this book a little bit further and discussing them together. If you didn't get into a group, by the way, there's still room, so please feel free to step in at this point. So one of the ways that our imagination really gets expressed is through dreams, through that wonderful night dream time and daydreams as well. But last week, Alberto Ramon told me one of his dreams, and I asked him if he would share it with you. So I want to invite Alberto up to share with us.
I never was too good about dream interpretation. And as a matter of fact, I forgot all my dreams, except this one that was so vivid that even though I had that dream when I was 10 years old, I never forgot it. But of course, I couldn't understand it. It took me years to finally make sense of that dream. This is what happened. This is how it went. I was with a group of kids, my age, 10 years old, walking through a park, going someplace, and all of a sudden, a twig on the ground caught my attention. So I started to observe it and playing with it, and the kids, the other guys, got impatient. They said, "Come on, let's go. This is only a twig. What are you doing?" But I ignored them and kept playing with the twig. So eventually I was able, in a few minutes, I was able to fly with that. I went high up, stayed there a few instants, and then I came down and landed well ahead of the group. So that was a dream. I was so excited that I wanted to keep playing like that. I did it a few more times, and then I woke up. So well. So years later, I finally made sense of it. It was a premonition on how, when you use an oracle, you can contact higher consciousness, and then you can have something, you can discover something very original, something fantastic. In my case, the oracle is the I Ching, which I practice, but it could be the tarot, or it could be other kinds of oracles. So the point of the dream was that you can do something fantastic or something very original by using an oracle. And expanding on that, it also says that using very simple tools, sometimes you can create something fantastic or something original. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alberto. That really stays with me, too, that through simple means we can achieve fantastic results. And you know, last week I told a dreamlike experience, then Alberto told me his dream as he tells his dream from childhood that stayed with him. I think of a childhood dream that has stayed with me. And I wondered, does that spark that in you too? Because as we share dreams, it deepens the impact that it has when a group or an individual holds space for us as we share a dream, it can really help us begin to unfurl that dream further. Have you had any dreams that have stayed with you through since a long, long time ago? Or recurring dreams, maybe, that come to you again and again? Very curious when that happens, right? A certain group of people or a certain scenario keeps getting played out and worked out in some way. So the question, I think, a lot of times what we approach our dreams with is the question of what does it mean, right? And that is a very intellectual kind of approach to it. But I want to suggest instead of asking that question, we bring to it, what is the dream asking of me? Because that then sets us on that path of following the guidance, the wisdom, the inspiration that is in the dream. Did you know that Charles and Myrtle Fillmore did that, our co-founders? Charles actually had a dream that was very formative to their journey. It's another thing about the dream that you shared, Alberto, and how it stayed with you for your life. It's very formative to the soul's journey, right? When we pay attention to these things that are vivid or memorable. And so in the case of the Fillmores, Charles had this dream where he was shown, he was taken, led up and down the streets of Kansas City. And they had been moving around a bit, Colorado and Texas and Kansas City, and Myrtle had tuberculosis, so really Kansas City wasn't the best environment for them. But the dream was so vivid and directive that they were essentially paying attention to the fact that the dream was asking something of them. It was asking them, the way they understood it, to settle there, to stay there, to become familiar with those streets and those pathways and that area. And so they did, and soon after, that nighttime dream that they paid attention to became a daytime commitment that turned into an entire movement, and we're standing here today because of it. Because significance was placed on this guidance. Because they didn't just say, oh, well, that was an interesting dream, or that was strange, and then go about their day. They actually put some weight to it. Today, there's 800 Unity ministries around the world. We have the largest prayer ministry in the world, Silent Unity. And all of that happened. All of that unfurled, those fantastic results unfurled from a simple dream. So dreams rekindle our imagination. They allow us then to recognize what could be possible as we just, you know, we could place too much importance on them, and I'm not suggesting that, but more holding them as in an open hand with a curious kind of space to say, huh, what is this asking of me? What is this leading me into? What is this telling me? Maybe it's about my next step in life, perhaps. Are you familiar with that early morning time? I like to think of it as like that gray morning light, that sort of gray morning space. It's in between, you're sort of waking, you're half awake and half asleep. Do you know what I'm talking about, that space? It's hard to really describe, but we all get it, right, in our own ways. It's actually a space that we could call a liminal space. Liminal just means in between, so it's that in-betweenish space. It could be that the body feels really heavy, if you've ever had that experience where you wake up and your body just feels so heavy. And, you know, some will say that it's because your spirit is out doing its nighttime travel and it hasn't come back yet. So it's like all the pieces aren't back together yet so that you have the full animation of your body to get up and go and move through your day. So that in-between space, that liminal word, it's used in architecture to mean a quite literal thing, which is between one physical destination and the next. And so, for example, a hallway. Now, how many of us cannot relate to transitional times in our lives when one door has closed and the next door hasn't opened yet, and we're kind of awkwardly hanging out in the hallway? Anybody ever have those experiences? Yeah, you might be like square in one right now, right? They're not the most comfortable places to be. Our society likes to, you know, push us along to the next thing. Robert Brummett wrote a book called Finding Yourself in Transition. He's a Unity minister. He would say that we're prone in those times to project and to create a pseudo new beginning in our life because we're so uncomfortable being in the hallway. We'll just open some door, open any door, get through it, you know. But this time, this liminal time, this liminal space is really rich. So spiritually, it's not a place we want to rush through, but just allow, be in. It's a time of imagination. It's a time of beingness. It's a time to allow things to percolate, to vision, to meditate, to be, to see, to allow ourselves to be, to receive the kind of guidance that Carrie was singing about in the meditation song. What's also amazing right now, in this moment, in this time and space in our world, we are in a collective liminal space like none, I don't know if it's like none we've ever been in, but none we've ever been in my lifetime anyway, I can say that. And so in this liminal time, if we could use another metaphor, it's like we've all, you know, almost 8 billion of us on the planet, us humans, have boarded a bus. And we're kind of in between destinations. We're in transit. And the bus is called COVID-19, and the bus is called climate change. And we're not sure when we're ever going to deboard fully the COVID-19 bus, and we're not sure exactly where the climate change bus is going to take us. It's uncomfortable, to say the least, right? Maybe even a little scary. There might be some anxiety with that. And yet here we are all in that same kind of space together. How amazing and unusual is that? It has to have a spiritual underlying sense of divine order that has brought us to this time and this place together, this soul family, this human soul family, to be all walking the planet right now. It's rich with possibility. So of course it's going to be a little bit scary because it's on the precipice of a big change, right? And that always can have that, but I like to call that scary excited. It's not just plain out scary, it's like something big is happening, right? You feel that when you tune into it, when you get away maybe from the direness of the news and you just go, yes, and something is happening that is rich and important and can be a major turning point in the consciousness of humankind, and I get to participate in that. Wow, that's pretty cool stuff. There's another minister friend of mine used to jump out of bed every day. I guess his spirit and his body were all together, and he'd say, what you got for me today, God? I'm all in. If we could wake up with that kind of energy and remembrance of the fact that we are living in, yes, liminal times, but liminal times on the edge of change that we can be a part of and we can help shift in the direction we want to go. That's powerful. So imagination, you know, one of the greatest Western minds said, Albert Einstein said that imagination is more important than knowledge. A scientist, a well-respected scientist said imagination is more important than knowledge. So what he meant, of course, is that we tend to want to receive from the outside in, right? To learn, to add to our intellectual knowledge. But the spiritual work is the opposite. The imaginary realm is a realm that we tap into from the inside out. And it has things to offer us in the spiritual world that there's just no way we could bring into the physical, visible world unless we go into that invisible spiritual space. So that's the draw, that's the call, that's the need for imagination in liminal times. It's what we are being asked to do, I believe. And so what happens when we honor this power of imagination is we honor the language of spirit. How does spirit communicate with us? It's often less in words. It can be in words, but it also can be in imagery, in symbols, in meditation, in visions, in dreams. So it's learning a new language in a way, but not learning it like we're mastering it once again and coming from that mental space of, I'm going to take these steps and I'm going to learn this thing. It's different than that. It's a wide open kind of space that we allow from all directions. It's a different, it's a letting go, I guess, of control is another way to say it, right? It's allowing ourselves to do what the mystics always urge us to do, surrender, but not surrender, not meaning give up, not meaning raise the white flag, meaning give over, give over. Give over my sense of knowing that it goes like this and then like this and then like this and go, I don't know how it goes, but I'm in it. I'm in the hallway. I'm on the bus. I'm on the bus with almost 8 billion other people, and I've got an opportunity here to contribute to something major that wants to happen in our world. So the great turning is something that was coined by deep ecologist Joanna Macy. She talked about how the great turning is basically the shift that is happening worldwide, or that can happen worldwide, that is needed to happen to go from an industrial growth society to a life-sustaining civilization. So Joanna imagined that there are a couple of dimensions to this great turning that have to happen in order for us to make the turn. And then one of the key dimensions, one of the three key dimensions she mentions, is consciousness. Well, man, isn't she singing our song in unity, right? Consciousness. It's the shift in consciousness. It's the spiritual consciousness that is key to making the change. So it's our time to shine. It's time, as one of my friends used to say, it's time for silent unity not to be silent anymore. So more people can be a part of the kinds of teachings that will help us shift things, that will help us make the great turning. Spiritual consciousness, this work that we do, is often helping us to see a bigger picture, both for our own lives and for our whole world. And it doesn't really matter where you're participating and focusing. So don't worry about it. If you're focused on the vision for your life and getting your, either as you would might say, or I might say, getting our lives together or moving to the next phase of our lives, that is part of the contribution that is being made, because you're working with your own consciousness and your own life, and we are all one, right? So what one does affects the whole, and what the whole does affects each one of us. So we don't really have to worry about how we're approaching it, whether we are approaching in the big picture solution kind of space, whether we're working in quantum physics or some big arena like that, or if we are working our lives, walking our path, as long as we are committed to shifting our consciousness, as long as we are committed to helping turn things around, to make the bus a magic bus, right? So Lauren Artress retells, the author of our book, retells the story of the Grail legend, which has been told so many times through so many years. You probably have heard of the Holy Grail and King Arthur's Round Table, and the Holy Fool character in this story is Parsifal. And so as she tells the story, she's talking about how Parsifal is riding his horse into the imaginal realm, into his own imaginal realm, essentially. He's sort of, you know, he starts out as the fool, essentially, and he's becoming the holy fool, right? He's becoming this understanding as he goes on his journey, more and more of that kind of wisdom that is part of our simplicity too, right? The simple wisdom. Anyway, Parsifal's riding his horse and he falls asleep. The journey is so long to get to his imagination that he falls asleep. And when he wakes up, the horse has stopped, the trail has ended, and they are standing on top of a cliff at the end of the cliff. Now, Parsifal is there because the trail has ended because he's never been there before, right? It's a new pathway. And because it's it's something that is in the invisible realm, so he's used to looking with his physical eyes, and at first he doesn't see. But then he softens his focus, and then he's able to see with his mind's eye or his spiritual eye or his third eye something else that's going on. In the lake below, there is a fisherman in a boat waving to him, beckoning to him to continue on the path that doesn't exist, at least to his physical eye, and telling him to meet him at the bridge. He's very convincing. He's known as the Fisher King. And so there's Parsifal and his horse frozen in fear, but feeling like there's something to this, this direction I'm getting, this guidance I'm getting, this man in the boat, there just seems to be something to it. It seems true. It seems right. You know that feeling? And then, whoa, but it looks scary. But somehow they muster the courage. And so the horse picks up the one foot and clip, clap. And guess what happens? The earth rises up to meet his feet and support him. But not until he takes the next step and the next step and the next step. And so with every step, there is support. And with every step, then, Parsifal and his horse gain confidence. It's the same for us. As we enter this imaginal realm, as we enter the mystical world, as we go deeper into our spirituality, it feels a little like that. I can't get my footing because it's not grounded like earth, right? But what if I step in? It doesn't feel so good. Oh, look, there it is. Solid, you know? And then we can keep going, keep going, keep going. And then before you know it, this becomes our norm. This becomes something that is so comfortable for us. And then we can move between the worlds. So we can take this goodness from the imaginal realm and bring it into the world. Ideas from the divine, visions that we've seen, dreams we've carried all of our lives. It becomes a true soul's journey. And we can open ourselves to it, allow it, not discount it, not invalidate it, because the world around us will do some of that, right? But if we instead recognize that we ourselves have access to incredible resolutions and solutions by stepping into our imaginal realm, and those resolutions and solutions can be for anyone and anything, including ourselves, our children, our world, whatever it may be. So, the path of the holy fool is not a linear path. This too is a way that we're sort of oriented, I guess, in our world to be linear in our thinking, right? And so this pathway is a labyrinth pathway, so it's got this natural circular and actually lends itself naturally to being an all-inclusive pathway. So another thing that happens as we move into this kind of realm is we drop it's not so much we drop some of the duality of life, but the duality comes back together as one. So we move from the dual understanding of the world to that experience of oneness, oneness with spirit, oneness with all life, oneness with all life forms, but so many other things happen and that come together. So we can move from this space into the space of the world, service, acting in the world, contributing to the world, back to the place of centering and receiving. We can go from giving to receiving, in other words. We can go to that place of sort of meditative space. That's the inward space toward that Grail castle, right? And then, but we can also move out, and it doesn't have to be in any particular order. We can hear what's going on in the world or see what's going on in the world, and we can see inside and hear inside what Spirit is telling us about that. Dag Hammarskjöld wrote in his book, Markings, the more faithfully you listen to the voice within, the better you will hear what is sounding outside. So it's a harmony. There's a harmonic going on when we enter this world and learn how to move back and forth And then the back and forth isn't back and forth anymore, right? Because it is all one. It's crazy to wrap our minds around it in a way. So maybe we don't need to even go there, but just receive with our hearts. You know, because this is the realm of the heart. This is the realm of, I don't really have words for it. I keep saying words. I hope you're getting some of the words. Words are coming out. I'm just not sure that they're making sense. The forward movement on the path, this path, the labyrinth path, is not like I do A and B and then C, right? But instead, it's like a divine order that unfolds. And it can go in all different kinds of directions. That was so freeing to me when Lauren Artress was consulting with us about our labyrinth here and the little one that Brenly and I put in our backyard. And I always thought it was sacrosanct. Like, you can't walk across the labyrinth. You can only walk the labyrinth, right? You walk in, you walk to the center, you walk out. And when I'd see people go to the center and just walk right out, I'd be like, oh. You should not do that. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but you should not do that. And Lauren was like, sure you can. Why not? Kids play on it all the time. They run in all directions. And you can walk across it any time. Which just was so freeing, you know? It's so freeing to know, like, yeah, it's all good. It's all good. We're standing in the pathway. It's good. Good things are happening. We don't have to do anything more than that, you know? So it's just, it's letting ourselves kind of off the hook of how we think things should go and be and do and look. And when we do, then visioning and contributing and serving and receiving and dreaming can all be happening at the same time. So that's part of the oneness. And part of the oneness, too, is a recognition we can walk a labyrinth alone or in community, and both experiences can be very powerful, just like we can meditate alone or in community, right? But if you think about, especially during this last year and a half, our individual paths, which have maybe felt like they're carved out just for us, right, have merged into a collective path. We can't really separate them out anymore. We're on the same trajectory. We're on the same path. We are all, almost 8 billion of us, plus all the animals and the plants and all the rest of the life, we are all walking this ancient labyrinth path to unlock our imaginations so that the great turning can occur. What will be on the other side? We don't know exactly, but we can dream it up. We can vision it. We can project our visions. We can receive visions. We can get a little inkling or a little sense. We can be like the fish, like Parsifal and his horse, who have a sense that even though it makes no sense, there's no path there. This guy is saying there's a path. There's no path. I can't see the path. He's saying there's a bridge over there. I'm supposed to meet him at the bridge. But there is an intuitive sense that says, that's right. That's right. It doesn't look like that, but that's right. And so I'm going to follow that. I'm going to honor that. I'm going to put my spiritual language up above all others. I'm going to take what I receive from this inward place that is an infinite place of wisdom and divine intelligence, and I'm going to follow that first and foremost, once and for all. Imagine what we can do. That's it, isn't it? That's it. It's the shift in our priorities. It's allowing ourselves to say, and we don't have to change anything on the outside. Now, it will change, but we don't need to change it. We just say, I'm going to make this commitment. I'm going to enter my imaginal realm. I'm going to start playing in that and dancing in that and moving in that and creating in that. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm going to follow that intuitive urge and see what happens. We can do like the artist way dates. Do you remember those? Julia Cameron would have you go on artist dates and you just take yourself on a date. So you have no plans. I'm just going to go do something that brings me joy. And then before you know it, oh, you're in your car and you're driving to an art museum or you're out in nature going for a walk and you're not really even sure how you got there because you just followed that intuitive urge. Make intuitive dates with yourself and say, I'm just going to follow my intuition for the next couple hours. Nothing else. I will only do what I'm intuitively guided to do. It's going to be so fun. I can't wait to hear the stories if you take this up. So the worlds of soul and soil come together when we are on this kind of path, right? It's a place where we can both be grounded, fully grounded on the earth, feel that sense of earth is beneath our feet every step of the way, and also feel like we're on this mystical, magical soul journey. That's what comes together when we allow ourselves to recognize I can be grounded and creative. I can be both, and actually that's what the world needs now. That's what the world needs most of all, is people who can be creative and grounded at the same time, that we can recognize and look into in a moment's time. You can be in a business meeting, you can be in the most buttoned up place you could ever imagine, and you could be sitting there in the imaginal realm, also paying attention to what's going on in the room, and bringing some of that invisible wisdom into that space. What a blessing will that be, huh? Everybody just sort of loosen up a little bit and relax their shoulders, and suddenly everybody's laughing and having fun, because the imaginal realm is a child's place of joy and play. And so we're all going to get to have more fun, too, as we step into the imagination. Anybody want to sign up for that? A little more fun, a little more joy in your life, a little more play? Yes, two hands back there, Richard, I'm with you. So our imagination shows us what's possible, and then it brings in the other innate divine powers or abilities that we have to make it so. So it's not all pure imagination that we do things in the world. We'll bring in understanding. We'll bring in the power of will. We'll bring in the power of order. And then we will take the practical steps that we need to take that unfold from there. So what is being revealed for you these days through your dreams and meditations and visions? And you know, what is it that is knocking on the door of your heart from the inside? Because there is always something. There's always something that wants something of us from the spiritual realm of our being to be physicalized, to be made visible. So there's something in you. And whatever that is, I encourage you to pay attention, to receive it. And then maybe just like Parsifal's horse, just a little clip, clop. Whoa, solid ground. All right. And then pretty soon we're confident. We're comfortable. We feel we don't even so much need that first faithful step because it just is. It just is a part of our being. It's a part of the fabric of our being then. And will you take a step toward the great turning? We have made it so easy for you. You could just clip-clop right out of the sanctuary across the patio and you could see Nancy and you could sign up for with the Earth Care team to take some actual practical steps to help us make the turn. So it's both. It's all of this, right? It's all part of the spiritual journey. The practical things we do in the world to make a difference and the things that we do to step into this mystical being that we are. There's always somebody to help us, just like Nancy's outside. There's always some kind of divine presence with us. And the divine presence that is within all of us, that is presenced for us. So I come back to Alberto's dream because I don't want to forget that line that you gave us, that we can get fantastic results with very simple means. To remember that simple things that come into our lives, simple means, it doesn't have to be extravagant. We can fly with a twig, for goodness sakes, right? Things can happen, and the imagination is the first step. To step into our imagination, that simple step will begin to unfold those fantastic results that I know we all want. So let's know this together, that both the stepping into the imagination and the great turning is happening through us and as us. Let's affirm it together. I step into my imagination in faith, while contributing to the great turning of our times. So it is.